Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. We've all heard that drinking during pregnancy can hurt a baby. But every year, children are born with mental or physical impairments linked to alcohol abuse during pregnancy. And the number of cases of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder are higher in some Native communities. Do you see this as an issue in your tribe? Did your own mother drink while she was pregnant? Or do you have friends or relatives who you've seen drink while pregnant, but didn't know how to make them stop? Stay with us as we take on fetal alcohol syndrome right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new organization has been created to work on improving the relationship between First Nations people and other Canadians. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The aim of the group, and consequently the new organization, is to rebuild trust. They say that could be a way of finding solutions to the many problems faced by Canada's Indigenous community. A panel of the group's members says the relationship must be rebuilt for the moral and economic good of the country. The new organization, Canadians for a New Partnership, is being led by two former prime ministers from opposite ends of the political spectrum, Liberal Paul Martin and Progressive Conservative Joe Clark. They will hold public lectures and debates on issues which divide Native and non-Native groups in an effort to bring them together.
This national dialogue between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Canadians has to be a permanent part of the scene. This country, economically, morally, our value systems are very much dependent upon how we relate to each other. The poverty that exists in the Aboriginal communities is just simply not acceptable. And for Canadians not to discuss it, and for Canadians not to understand what has to be done, is just wrong.
Some Native leaders agree that the dialogue needs to begin. A former national chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Ovid Mercredi, says they don't all agree on all the issues, but every member of the group agrees the conversation has to begin somewhere. Some reaction was more skeptical, with criticism of the group's sources of funding and the involvement of former prime ministers, adding that perhaps what's needed is to take the issue outside political circles. While some Native leaders say true reconciliation needs more than talk. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal leaders, health professionals, and Native organizations are seeking to develop long-term solutions to contract support costs, or CSC. Tribes across the country administer health care through contracts or self-governance. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled tribes must be paid their full CSC, regardless of appropriations by Congress. Many are worried. Direct service tribes, those that receive primary care from the Indian Health Service, could be impacted by the requirement. Andy Joseph Jr. is a board member of the National Indian Health Board.
To me, it's a real serious issue. It's a crisis in Indian country. By getting some of the health care cut from the federal service unit, to me, that means lives of our people.
Joseph also works on health issues for the Colville Confederated Tribes and chairs the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board.
Because of the fully funding of contract support cost, a lot of different tribes are looking at this as an opportunity to take on the government's responsibility. Because of that, there's this new shortfall that's coming up that IHS is going to have to figure out where to get the money from.
Leaders say health services are already and continually underfunded. The National Indian Health Board is asking for unity on the issue among self-governance and direct service tribes, and are asking for tribal leaders to advocate. Jefferson Keel is Lieutenant Governor of the Chickasaw Nation.
We need tribal leaders to come and voice their support, and then we need to go to Congress and get Congress to help us in addressing the budget shortfalls, the appropriations that are needed. You know, and the bottom line is, if we can spend $1 billion in Iraq and Afghanistan rebuilding their health clinics and those, surely we can spend just a fraction of that here addressing the needs in Native America. That's what my concern is.
Congress created a path for CSC in fiscal year 2014, and work groups are examining options for the future. The issue was of concern among many people this week at the National Indian Health Board Annual Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Our democracy is a government of the people, for the people. Let's keep it that way. Vote on November 4th. Get registered. Cast your vote. It's that simple. More information at nativenews.net. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Most of us know that drinking while pregnant can hurt the baby, but we didn't always know the science behind it. Up until a few decades ago, many women who drank during pregnancy were not publicly warned about the effects of alcohol can have on an unborn child. Despite education efforts, babies are still born every year with symptoms related to fetal alcohol syndrome, or as many people refer to it, FAS. And is this something your community is facing, or maybe even your own family? And do you know someone who was born with an FAS disorder? Some people are finding out as adults that issues they've had their entire life can be connected back to their mother's drinking during her pregnancy. And have you ever wondered if you have it, but were never accurately diagnosed? And what does it mean to live with FAS? We're going to start today by hearing from some people who have been personally impacted by fetal alcohol syndrome. And we also have guests who can also answer your question. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to first welcome Miles Hemmelreich to the program. And he's with us from the Alberta Province in Canada. And he is a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, consultant and motivational speaker, and he is from the Big Stone Cree Nation of Alberta. Welcome to Native America Calling, Miles.
Good morning, thank you.
And Miles, we appreciate you sharing your story with us today, and there are many layers to your story. You currently work as an advocate, to speak out and create more awareness of FASD, but it has also affected you personally. And Miles, I'd like you to share, your own story. How would you say it has affected you in your own life?
It's something that's played a role in my life for my entire life, and plays a role every day. I went through a lot of struggles as a small child because there wasn't enough information about FASD, so there wasn't a lot of support at the time. And then as a teenager, I turned to the world of drugs and alcohol, just trying to look for acceptance because, again, people didn't understand what was going on and didn't know how to properly support me. And it wasn't until I really started to learn about FASD that I could learn and understand about myself. And once I understood, how FASD played a role in my life, I was able to bring in the proper supports and tools and was finding ways to live successfully.
And Miles, being diagnosed with that, what would you like to tell people, what it doesn't mean?
It doesn't mean that it's, a doom and gloom kind of sentencing. It's often heard or said that individuals with FASD are victims and that we suffer. And that's not the case at all. We have a disability. It just means that we need certain supports and we may learn differently. It doesn't mean that we can't learn. It means we are going to have struggles. But it means that society needs to kind of change their view and support us in different ways. So understanding what FASD is and bringing in those supports can make such a huge change.
And again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. If you have something to say about this, we want to hear from you. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. I'd like you to answer that question, too. You know, what doesn't FASD mean? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Miles, you know, as we learn more about this, we know FASD occurs when a mother has been drinking while pregnant. And, you know, anything you'd like to share about your own personal story? Your birth mother drank while she was pregnant with you. What do you know about her situation?
You know, as I got older, I started to learn a little bit more. And it was difficult because I realized due to my mother drinking during her pregnancy, my FASD played a role in my struggles in school, played a role in my struggles in employment. And so it was trying to come to the realization that, you know, my mom didn't make those choices intentionally causing me problems. She didn't decide to, you know, have some alcohol thinking, oh, I'm going to make sure that he struggles in school and can't maintain a job. You know, we don't know enough information about exactly what amount or at what time affects the child, causing them to have FASD. So we can't say, you know, it's okay to have this much or it's okay to have that amount at this time. So we, of course, always say no alcohol during pregnancy is best. For me, I came to the realization and understanding that when I was a teenager, I turned to drugs and alcohol because it was a world that took me in and accepted me, you know, and I realized that is a very dangerous world. But I also ended up finding out that my mother moved to a large city. Had a very struggle with education. She only had an elementary education and couldn't speak English. So it was very difficult to get the supports that she needed. And she was, you know, surrounded by people that were taking advantage of her. And whether she knew she was pregnant or not, it was the lack of support around her that really played a big role in it. So for me, it was coming to the understanding, realization that there didn't need to and doesn't have to be any shame and blame on my mother because there's nothing that she did intentionally to harm me.
And Miles, if you could go back in time, you know, is there anything you'd want to say to her?
I would first like to say to the people around her, you know, that she needed that support and what that needed to look like. And then to my mother, you know, the only thing I knew about the reports that I received was that when we would have visits, that she would hold me for hours. And to me, that speaks volumes. That shows me that, you know, at the end of the day, whether she knew how to properly feed me or clothe me or give me a house, she loved me. And for that, I would say that I love her too, and I thank her for that.
Miles, I do appreciate you sharing your story with us. We want to hear from you, too. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And today we are talking about fetal alcohol syndrome. It's also referred to as fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, FASD. And, you know, what do you think about this? What have you heard? Are there dialogues going on in your community? And what about when we start taking the approach of thinking of all the things that lead to this rather than playing the blame game? What do you think about that? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Miles, when we think about this as a family issue, you know, how do you think we change things when we take that kind of view when it comes to FASD?
You know, in the Native culture, I think we have something that is very special. You know, you have your mom and your dad and your brothers and your sisters, and then after that, everyone's auntie and uncle, and we come together as a family, and everyone's supporting everybody. And so I think that's something that, you know, can really transfer to other cultures throughout the world, where it's coming in as a family, supporting the individual, because that's really what needs to happen, is understanding where the individual's at and bringing in as many supports as possible to make this, you know, individual feel supported and loved. And I, like I said, I think that's something that in our culture that we just naturally do. And I think it's a great thing.
And Miles, you know, somebody who lives with this, any message you have for other folks out there who are living with this, any advice or just words that you'd like to send to them?
I think it's very important that we don't look at the doom and gloom of FASD, that we understand that FASD is something that we have. It doesn't define us. It's not who we are. And I think that's a huge thing to understand. And then getting the proper diagnosis and understanding what role FASD plays in your life, and so that you know what kind of support you're going to need and the way that you best learn, and then focusing on your strengths. You know, not focusing on the things you can't do, but focusing on the things that you can do. And then you can have a life that you can be successful. You know, whatever that success looks like, it might like look different than somebody else's, but really understanding that FASD doesn't define you, you know, and you can live a life that's full of happiness and full of success once you are able to understand that FASD is a part of you and have that acceptance of it, and then bring in the proper supports, and then you can move forward in life.
Miles, thanks for that. And again, if you have a question for Miles, you can also call in to 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And, you know, maybe this is something in your family and you are raising someone who is also, you know, learning to live with FASD. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We're bringing in our first caller. We have Helen on the line. She's in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Helen, what would you like to share?
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to share that I worked with FAS and FAE children who are now productive adults. And what we did in the community as a teacher in school, we worked with an individual in the school, like one-on-one, and then we integrated that student with the other students to accept their what they see is different from their student behavior, and then to the parents, then the community, and then bringing out in the open and getting out of denial for parents and family members or caregivers. And I think what's really important is to get it out in the open and talking about it instead of keeping it a secret or being ashamed. That's the worst scenario for FAS and FAE.
And Helen, that's exactly why we're doing this show today, and we appreciate your call. And, you know, mentioning, you know, the classrooms, if we have any educators out there, you know, what are you doing to educate yourself about it? And what about students, you know, who you're working with? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We're bringing in another caller. We have Sunny in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Sunny, what do you think?
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
I was wondering, and I got a question, is it it's okay for a pregnant woman to drink in Alaska, I think, that the law can't do nothing?
That, okay. So, Sunny, let me bring Miles in on this. Miles, any thoughts?
Sorry, are you asking legally, is it okay?
I think he's asking, you know, is it, you know, are there any laws that, you know, oh, Sunny, go ahead and ask your question again. I don't want to speak for you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if there is a law for pregnant women not to drink.
Okay. And, Miles, any thoughts? Are there any laws on the book that help us?
There are certain places that there is laws, and there's more stuff coming out on that in regards to making it illegal for the mother to drink during her pregnancy. But personally, I don't know if that's the, you know, direction that we want to go in, because, you know, it's about getting that information and that support out there. Again, we really want to get away from the shame and blame. And when we look at behavioral and we say, oh, it's a bad behavior, here's your punishment, then we're going more to shame and blame rather than support and understanding. So, yeah, there are places out there that it is illegal to drink and the mother can be charged. But I'm not sure that's necessarily the best thing that we can do right now.
All right, Sonny, thank you for your call. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. You know, what are some of the approaches you think we should be taking? What about in our own tribal communities? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Miles, you know, as we understand more about this and hear from you who is dealing with this, and any thoughts about pitfalls that people often fall into when they're talking about this or they're living with FASD?
I find a lot of times from doing my presentations and doing the one-on-one mentoring that there are a lot of similarities in the journey that I share in regards to, you know, going through many foster homes, and then that causes attachment disorder, and then the struggles in school and the struggles with employment, and then, you know, getting involved in crime because you're being taken advantage of. So I think there's a lot of similarities in many people who live with FASD and, you know, the journey that they're going through. And so I think understanding how to, you know, bring in the information on this is so key, because then we can start to take away from that stuff. But also understanding, too, that you have a lot of secondary disabilities that you could be facing. You know, attachment disorder is a huge thing. So how much of that is playing a role in the person's life? You know, and then, you know, sensory issues, information overload. Because it's a full-body diagnosis, understanding that it affects more than just the brain, it affects the whole body. So the bones, the muscles, the tissues. And these are things that I found that individuals with FASD that I've spoken with, you know, these are some of the struggles that we face every day.
All right, Miles, thank you for that. 1-800-99-NATIVE, join the conversation. You know, what do you face every day when you have FASD? What about parents? We want to hear from you, too. Call us, 1-800-996-2848. And now I'd like to bring in another voice to our talking circle. Chrissy Bronco is the FASD team coordinator with the Counseling and Family Services of the Shoshone-Bannock Tribes. She's also a licensed clinical social worker, and she is Shoshone-Bannock. Welcome to Native America Calling, Chrissy. And I also understand you want to greet folks in your language.
Yes. Zua ambuachu, hagani hananihat, Chrissy Bronco. So good morning, my friends. My name is Chrissy Bronco. I'm a member of the Shoshone-Bannock Tribes, and here to speak to you about our FASD team.
And Chrissy, we referred to people who are affected by a mother's drinking while she's pregnant in two ways today. Can you tell us the difference between FAS, and which is fetal alcohol syndrome, and FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder?
Yes, FAS was the initial diagnosis that they come up with back in the 70s when they found out that there was a correlation between drinking alcohol while you're pregnant. And FAS looks at more of the full spectrum, that you've got both the facial anomalies along with the central nervous damage. What they've come up with now is a new diagnosis called the FASD, which is a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is more of an umbrella type of diagnosis. And then there's a number of diagnoses that fall underneath that. So things such as sentinel physical findings, neurological behavior disorder, static encephalopathy. So a lot more diagnoses now. There's a full range of them that fall under the FASD category. And FAS is one that falls underneath there.
All right. Thanks for that, Chrissy. Got a caller we're bringing in. We're bringing in Ahmed, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. What would you like to add?
First off, thank you very much for Chrissy and Miles for, you know, being involved in this, dialogue that we don't have enough of. So thank you very much for Miles and Chrissy. My comment was when Miles explained like what he saw regarding his mother, and if you can go back and say something to her, he said that, you know, first he would like to address the people around his mother. And to me, that it talks about like how pregnant mothers do need to have the support from their families and communities, instead of just playing the blame and shame game. And I thought that was a very beautiful comment that he brought up.
I do too. Thanks a lot for your call, man. 1-800-996-2848. And Chrissy, you know, just like our caller said, when we start taking a different approach than blame and shame, you know, how does that really advance things and especially bring about more healthiness?
Well, I think initially when we set up our team back in 2001, there was a lot of shame and blame, and so we had a hard time getting people to come forward to actually start to do the diagnoses. But since it's kind of evolved in the last 13 years, it's really kind of flourished in our community, where now people are coming forward themselves with self-referrals saying, you know, I think I might be affected by alcohol, or mothers now saying, you know, I'll admit I drank and I want to get my baby evaluated and get some services in place. So I think kind of getting rid of the shame and blame, how it used to be, people nowadays with talking about it and it being an open communication and more awareness, people are coming forward saying we want to get diagnosed so we can get proper services in place.
And Chrissy, what do you think leads to that shame and blame? You know, does that come from something else? When we talk about FAS or FASD, we take a different approach than when we hear our communities are affected by different diagnoses. You know, why is it that we quickly jump into that? What is so unique about this diagnosis than others?
Well, I think definitely it's the guilt. You know, mothers feel guilty that they've done this to their baby. So whether it's that they see the facial anomalies where they've got the full-blown FAS, or it's that the child might look normal, but then they're not acting normal, and so the parents might, you know, take a lot of guilt upon themselves that they've done something wrong, especially the mothers. So we have a lot of extended family who step forward and say, you know, if they have the child, or even adults now coming forward saying, I think my mom might have drank, or I know that my sister or auntie or cousin or what have you drank with the pregnancy, and so we want to get help for this child now, because I think we're seeing the long-term effects that if we can get services and interventions in place early, it's really going to help the person flourish in their future instead of, you know, getting down and out on themselves with that shame and blame. They're like, okay, I have a disability. Now how do we take care of it so I can move forward?
All right. And on the line today, we have Chrissy Bronco. She is the FASD team coordinator with the counseling and family services at the Shoshone Bannock Tribes. Also with us, we have Miles Hemmelreich, and he is a motivational speaker. If you have questions for either of them, you can call in and ask. And the number to join is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And when you hear, you know, the acronym FAS, you know, what do you think of? I know there was a lot of attention paid a couple of decades ago when a movie and a book came out and it got people really thinking and talking about this. You know, what do you think about it? How far have we come? And what do you think about the attention that comes along with FAS to Native America? Do you think it's a stigma? We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And more lines of communication are open on our social media. You can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also send your comments to Facebook, and we're there. Or if you need to, email comments at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And we know that this is a very, you know, important issue. It's also sensitive. And if you feel more comfortable calling in anonymously, we'll take your call too. Phone lines are open, but we'll be right back after the break. I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. People around the country are responding to the news that an NFL player was kicked out of the league following a domestic violence incident. Join us next time as we talk about the vibrant online conversation on why people stay and why they leave abusive situations.
Take a yard, you.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Vote on November 4th. It makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Let your Native voice be heard. Vote for our people, our land, and our future. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native America Calling is your electronic talking circle, funded by organizations that support programming that highlights contemporary Native life. Find out how to reach our listeners with your support of this program by visiting nativeamericacalling.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and today we are talking about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, in our communities. And we're learning about this condition and about how individuals and tribes can help mothers who are facing this. We have Miles Hemmelreich, FASD spokesperson, with us, as well as Chrissy Bronco. She's with the Shoshone-Bannock FASD team, and she's one of the coordinators. She's here with us, and we are also welcoming all your questions and even your personal stories. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We want you to join the conversation. And let's go ahead and check our phone lines. Looks like we got John on the line. He is in Grand Coulee, Washington, and he's tuned in. John, welcome to the hour, and what would you like to add?
Hey, I have a son I took on and adopted. He's 28. I just wanted to let people know that not a lot of people know, not even the parents. Some of them don't realize that their children have it. This child, he's a grown man, but he's 14 mentally, and I was best friends with his dad before his dad passed away. When he was 24 and not working almost all of his life at that point, I met him, and he never made eye contact. His hand shook. Really nice kid at heart. I told his dad that I thought something was wrong and took him to mental health, and they diagnosed him with fetal alcohol. Gave him Social Security, and up until that point, the father kept him in the house. He kind of helped out with around the house stuff. Now that he's living with me, he's kind of opening up. He understands what's going on with this fetal alcohol syndrome, and I had to learn. Best move I ever did. But I couldn't believe it. His age and the father and everything, nobody knew what was going on until I took him into the city, got him looked at, checked out, and got him counseling, got him off the alcohol that he himself was drinking. And he's, best thing ever happened to me. I'm just tickled to death. And when I heard your show, it kind of hit home because I've had him with me for 3 years now.
John, we do appreciate you calling us and sharing in this way. And Miles, you have anything to share with John?
I would just like to say thank you to John. That's a perfect example of bringing in the proper support to help change somebody's life. And I think that's great. You know, unfortunately, there is so many people out there where it's not understood because it's not as simple as, you know, it's just one culture. It's just, you know, the Native American women that drink and their child will have FASD. You know, we don't know what amount at what time. So it's so difficult to understand how many people actually are affected by FASD. And so there's a lack of understanding on that. But there's a lack of support because of not knowing how many people have it. So I think it's such a great message that John just shared with us about getting that information, getting the proper supports, and then the great message of being able to bring in those supports and change someone's life.
All right. Thanks again, John, for your call. Let's go ahead and bring in Pete. He is in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Pete, you got a question for us.
I do have a question for both of you guests on the Boston comment. I've drank in the past, and my partner didn't drink. Would my children be affected in any way?
All right, Pete, thank you for your call. Chrissy, can you help us with that one?
Okay, so just for clarification, he drank while his partner was pregnant?
Yes.
Okay, so at this point, there's no documentation that males drinking affects the fetus other than there's a low testosterone count, which could then have some chromosome implications. But at this point, all of the background information is really based upon the mother drinking, since the baby, the fetus, is in the uterus throughout the pregnancy. So with males, there's no documentation at this point that their drinking affects the baby to become fetal alcohol.
And Chrissy, this is a good moment, you know, just to go over some of the basics, you know, if anybody has questions about, you know, how does it happen? And, you know, we've also chatted a little bit about, you know, what kind of amount or, you know, anything you want to throw out there, the basics of what we do know leads to FAS or FASD.
Well, one of the first things that we know is that it can happen right from the moment of conception. Any amount of alcohol is not safe for a fetus. And so at the moment of conception, right away the central nervous system and the brain stem starts to develop in the fetus. And so if the mother's even drinking on the first day of conception, second day right in there, it starts. There is an impact of some sort on the fetus, because what happens is the alcohol passes over through the placenta into the uterus, and basically the baby or the fetus is in that amniotic fluid with the alcohol. And that alcohol doesn't get drained out at all. It just stays within the uterus in the amniotic fluid. So if a mother's drinking, the alcohol comes in and it stays in there the entire pregnancy. And so that's why they really say no amount is safe, you know, because we just never know at what point. Is it on day 27 of the pregnancy, day 50, day 90? At what point is she consuming alcohol, and what's developing at that point? You know, where there's three trimesters of pregnancy, we know that the first thing to develop is going to be the brain stem and the central nervous system. So that's why a lot of times we'll see babies that are affected with, affected more neurologically, and so they don't look fetal alcohol, but their behavior shows that something's different. And so whether it's their thinking, concentration, ability to connect A to B, follow through with a request, and kind of grasping more abstract concepts versus concrete, they have a hard time with that, because throughout the whole 9 months of pregnancy is when the central nervous system develops. It's when ladies are further on in their pregnancy, when they, you know, you can start to see the baby, that they'll generally stop drinking, because then there's more, then it comes back to the shame. Hey, you're drinking, you're pregnant, you shouldn't be drinking, so women will stop. It's during that third trimester of pregnancy that then all of the, more of the features are being developed. So things like the limbs and the fingers and the toes and the eyes and the ears and all that stuff. So if a woman's drinking early on, and most women don't find out until they're, you know, sometimes up to 3 months along that they don't even realize that they're pregnant. And so that first trimester, they might have drank the whole time. So that's why we tend to see more of the neurological damage versus the full fetal alcohol syndrome.
All right. Thanks, Chrissy. And Miles, I know you got to get going here and just want to give you a moment. You know, what would you like to leave us with today?
Just understanding that how important it is to get that conversation out there, you know, just like we're doing today, you know, getting that conversation about, you know, the medical stuff that Chrissy has shared is so important to understand that. And then the understanding of, okay, bringing in those supports and finding the successes for those individuals, because FASD is something that affects so many people. That unfortunately the message getting out there isn't quite big enough yet, and that's why we need to keep doing what we're doing. But understanding that FASD is a disability and we need to bring in those supports. It's not something that we need to have the shame and blame on or the doom and gloom. FASD is something that I live with successfully. I struggled with many things in my life, but I've also had many successes. And as I said earlier, you know, some of the things I've struggled with in my life, I've found are similar journeys that individuals with FASD have had, but I can say that also about the successes that I've had, because I've been able to focus on the strengths that I have, and I've seen that in other individuals who we like to call FASD warriors out there, finding those successes. So yeah, let's just, you know, move past that shame and blame and that doom and gloom, and let's start living a life that's full of FASD, that I like to call faith, ability, strength, and determination. Thank you for this opportunity.
Miles Himmelreich, we do appreciate you joining us. And what do you want to add? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. I want to go ahead and bring in another voice coming to us from Los Angeles, California. We got another person who is also giving a part of their life, too, to help educate others about FASD. I want to go ahead and bring in Danielle. She's on the line. And Danielle, what would you like to add, you know, as we create more understanding? Go ahead, Danielle.
Everyone has done a really nice job of talking and discussing. I think Miles has done a wonderful job about talking about the experience. The people that I know with FASDs have had different difficulties and problems throughout their lives, and it has depended on what damage there's been and what kind of damage and how much. So some people are able to manage well and they are functional. Other people have problems and, like it said, they have maybe learning disabilities or sometimes even physical disabilities because, as it's been said, there are different times when different parts of the baby are developing, and whenever the alcohol is, I guess, coming in contact with the baby at that point, that's what's going to be damaged. And I think that people, like it's been said before, they don't realize, the women don't realize they're pregnant maybe, and they still continue drinking. And a lot of people stop once they find out they're pregnant. Other people are not stopping, and that's why we have treatment programs, and that's why people, we say that they're addicted and that they need to get into a program, and hopefully when they get into a program, they can stop drinking, and whatever damage has been done will stop at that point.
All right, Danielle, hold tight. I got another caller we're going to bring in, and we are going to Newtown, North Dakota. We're going to bring in JC, tuned in on KMHA. And JC, you got a question for us?
Yeah, I was wondering if a woman that has FAS or FASD can, or if she gets pregnant, does she carry, does anything carry over onto the children?
Okay, thanks for your call, JC. Danielle, any thoughts on that?
What we've talked about with this is that it's the actual contact of the alcohol in the uterus with the baby. So if she drinks, then there can be damage. This has come up on discussion before because if the woman has FASD and she doesn't understand consequences and she doesn't understand what can happen, then it's lots of times more difficult for her to stop drinking and for her to understand the consequences to her baby.
All right. Thanks for your question, JC. Let's bring in another caller. We have Loretta in White River, Arizona, tuned in on KNNB. Loretta, what would you like to share?
Hi. I just wanted to, you know, share that I think I have a child who has FAS and ADHD, and it's not just, you know, the child that suffers as well, but it's something that affects the emotions, that affect the whole family entirely. I was listening to the gentleman, Miles, who stated that, you know, there's, you know, a part where you can't go through the shame and blame, but with my son, I think the hardest part for me in dealing with his ADHD and FAS is that, you know, we started to notice it when he was going into school and we got support from the teachers. But the thing that is the way, you know, every child has different issues, and his is the aggression. He's on medication, unfortunately, and that was a hard part for us to accept. When he got on medication, I think my oldest son, who's 25, cried about it because he didn't want his brother to be, you know, teased or laughed at in school, but there are support systems. We receive, he just started receiving counseling from Apache Behavioral Health here in White River, and I do let the teachers know, you know, before school starts what, you know, what issues he has, because his aggression and behaviors are so bad that the medication controls that. And in the meanwhile, for me, I think the hardest part is knowing that because of somebody's decisions to drink while they were pregnant with him. He has to be like this for, I don't know if it's going to be for the rest of his life or if it's just going to be for a little while, but it's not fair for my, because this is how I feel. It's not fair because he doesn't get to get that chance at a normal life like the biological parent has that chance to have a normal life no matter what. I think that's the thing, the issue that I'm dealing with right now, because when I'm watching my son go through these emotions of aggression and the behaviors, it's really tough sometimes. And sometimes it's to a point where the anger comes because I get so upset with the person that that had him, that I feel like, you know, it's just not fair that they're living a normal life and he has to endure this at such a young age. And so I think, you know, just emotions plays a lot of parts. And then that's where you have to really ask for support. I mean, he has aunts and family that come talk to me and give support, you know, encouragement, because they're aware, because it's, you know, it's a family, it's in the family. And so, and for him, I feel bad because he knows he has something's wrong with him. The way he explains it himself, because he's 8 years old, is that his brain is running too fast. And it needs to slow down. But that's all he knows, because he doesn't know anything about the, you know, when he was a baby, because the family, we have chosen not to let him know about those things in his early life because we don't want him to be hurt. But at the same time, listening to Miles and how he has successfully come forward in his life and has learned not to do the shame and blame, I guess that's the kind of the part that I'm going through right now, and we'll have to learn to deal with that. But it does affect the family in a lot of ways, but there are support systems and there are ways that, you know, you can help these children. But for some of them, it does take longer. Just like with my son, I think the behaviors are getting worse. The medication has increased, and, you know, he has a really good doctor with here at Indian Health Services that has just been so supportive in helping us to figure out what we can do for him.
And Loretta, and I know you have so many things to share, and we do appreciate you, you know, stepping up today and sharing your thoughts and, you know, just putting it out there. You know, if there are other folks who can relate to the same thing, you can also connect to our hour by sending us a tweet. And, you know, there may not be people who are ready to share today. And we hope that, you know, this line of communication stays open. If there's still something you want to share after we sign off, you can also send us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And Chrissy, you know, what do you think about when you hear stories like Loretta or, you know, people who have the courage to speak out about their own frustration? Go ahead, Chrissy.
I think that's wonderful that people can have a voice and to share that, because I always, when we sit down to do the debrief, which is to review the diagnosis with patients, we always invite, you know, whoever they feel comfortable, the family, family members to come in, and there's a lot of questions that they want to ask. When we sit down with our team, we have our physician, our psychiatrist, our social workers, our school people, everybody who's on our team, they sit down, and so the family gets the opportunity to ask a lot of questions. And I think the more, and so we can provide support that in that way and let them know that, you know, we're here to assist if we need to help you in the school system, because there's several implications when a diagnosis is made. So for health care, for education, for any kind of societal expectations, we want to review what those implications may be and let them know that we're here as a support. And so I thank the parents, you know, or family members, caregivers that have taken on some of these children, because love's really the thing that they need. They need to know that people love them and that they're human and that they're going to be okay. We just let them know it's a disability, and it's something that we just have to learn a different way to do things. We teach a different way, and it's not that kids, you know, can't learn. It's just trying to teach them a different way. So we always say, you know, if you had an expectation to go be a doctor, maybe you're going to change your career plan and want to be like the assistant to the doctor or something. So not to set expectations for where we're going to set them up to fail, but looking at what their strengths are and what they're good at. And a lot of times we find that they're real good with hands-on activities and very caring, work really good with animals. So we're finding a lot of strengths with them, and we just want to share that with the parents and the caretakers. One thing that we find as well is that family members, when we do the diagnosis and go through the debriefing period with them, they're saying, hey, we need to tell the other students and the other people about this. And so we've been asked actually to come into our tribal high schools and the junior highs and share information with students, you know, our young moms and young teenagers that have the potential to become pregnant, that share the word that no amount of alcohol is safe during pregnancy. And so our one big thing, too, to the males is that your job, if your girlfriend or, you know, your wife or your significant other becomes pregnant, is to support them in their pregnancy by you being sober as well. So that's a really big message that we share.
Well, Chrissy Bronco, we do appreciate you joining us today. A voice from the Shoshone-Bannock Nations. Thank you for joining us. And I got another caller we're going to bring in. We have Deborah in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Deborah, what would you like to share?
Hi, thank you. I've been listening with a lot of interest to this topic, and I actually used to do educational groups with men talking about FAS and FAE, and just what she said. One thing that we talked about was for the men, what choices they make make a lot of difference, not just not necessarily biologically, but socially for the mother. You know, it makes a big difference if he's going to say, oh, you know what, you're not drinking, I'm going to join you. And rather than maybe being out until 2 a.m., and then not only does she not have someone there with her, but she might be worried about him, and then that adds stress, which, as we know, can make the pregnancy more difficult too. Another thing that we really talked about was it makes a difference with what choices parents make about drinking at any age that their kids are. It makes a big difference during pregnancy, but also when their kids are 2 years old, 5, 10, again, not for fetal alcohol syndrome, but for the whole life and experience of the child. So just for people to really understand that whatever choices they make about alcohol are really important choices for themselves and for their families at all points in life.
Deborah, thank you for calling us there in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. And, you know, I want to bring in one more voice as we get closer to wrap up this hour. We have Emily Travis on the line with us, and Emily is a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder advocate and spokesperson for the National Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome and Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's FASD Center for Excellence. And she is a participant in the Miss America organization. And Emily is Cherokee. I want to welcome you to the hour. And Emily, we just had a caller talking about, you know, we need to think about the choices we make. Anything you want to add to that?
Oh, CEO, hello. Yes, and good morning. I just wanted to say, first and foremost, that you don't just have to simply live with your diagnosis. You can thrive with your diagnosis. And it is very important to focus on the choices that you're making, not only if you are a woman and pregnant, but like many of the previous speakers were saying, if you are a man and your significant other is pregnant, it's also important that the man isn't drinking before conception, because that, of course, can affect the sperm as well. You know, as a person with a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, I have to get up every day and say that today I'm not gonna wallow in what could be, like Miles was saying, doom and gloom, but I'm going to focus on my abilities, on my strengths, and on the faith that I have in my Heavenly Father.
And Emily, you also work with other people, young women. You work at a pregnancy crisis center as well. What's some of the advice you give to other women, especially thinking about bringing in life in a good way?
Mm. Yes, I do volunteer at a pregnancy crisis center, and I always say every woman that comes to our doors, it's like looking into the eyes of my life-giving mother. And I do want to say that it's important that we don't call them our birth mothers. I've been taught to call them our life-giving mothers, because that's exactly what she did. She gave me life, and she is the reason I am here today and able to share my story. But with each woman that comes in, I want to say to them, if that is something that they're struggling with, number one, you are loved. No matter what choices you have made or are making now, God has the ability to use those situations for your good and ultimately his glory. So that aside, if that addiction is still something you're struggling with, or you're not sure if drinking during pregnancy is that bad, imagine, I want you to imagine if you were to crack open a raw egg and you were to pour vodka over that raw egg, that vodka actually cooks the egg. So imagine what drinking during pregnancy is doing to the developing baby. The womb is supposed to be the safest place on earth, and yet when we put such toxins inside, it suddenly becomes a scary environment. So just take a step back and realize that fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are 100% preventable.
All right, Emily, thank you for sharing that. And Danielle, we still got you with us. I also wanted to ask you, you know, what about reviving, you know, some of our traditional teachings of thinking about birth and life and bringing in life in a good way? You know, what happens when we revive that type of traditional thinking?
When we talk and give our classes, that's one of the things that we always incorporate. And we talk about the different cradle boards and the different types of ceremonies that different tribes have, and encourage people, and especially the young people, to go back to their traditions and to learn and realize that we had healthy lifestyles and alcohol was not a part of our lifestyle, and trying to change the lifestyle and going back and learning what is good and what's healthy for all of us, for all of our families. Focusing on the babies is one thing, but focusing on the family, circling and encompassing that baby, because we're related and we have extended families, and most of us who have come from those families are able to reach out and get help. And that's what's happened to a lot of the people that we've seen. We've seen aunties and grandmas and sisters and cousins that are taking care of these children and working with them and going ahead. And it does involve everybody. And they are trying to support and trying to help. And within that, we try to encourage people to really, really stay with their traditions and bring that back.
All right, Danielle, we are at the end of the hour. I do appreciate you joining us. Danielle Glenn Rivera, she works on this in Los Angeles. Also want to thank all of the folks who shared with us today. And, you know, you encourage all of us to continue to keep talking about this. Also want to thank our guests, Emily Travis, Chrissy Bronco, and also Miles Hemmelreich for joining us today. And you can continue to connect with us. Send us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Thanks to the folks here with Native America Calling, National Native News. And I'm Tara Gatewood. We will be back again next week with more shows from our electronic talking circle. Have a wonderful weekend.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.